TV File, the ultimate Buccaneers podcast.
Welcome aboard. With week three in the books, it's time to take a spin around the league and tackle the biggest stories with the coach, Brian Billick, joining us as he does every week to share his insight regarding what happened last weekend and what's to come this weekend. In this week's Rapid Fire Overtime segment, the one and only Sean Salisbury joins us with his Tell It Like It Is take on the NFL. But as always, we start with the big interview, so let's get to it.
The big interview.
Joining us from 620 WDAE is your midday host, 9 to noon, and the guy who handles pre- and post-game for Bucs Radio. You can follow him on Twitter at T-Kras, that's T-K-R-A-S, Tom Kresnicki. How are you doing today, Tom?
Doing well. Pleasure to be with you.
Well, thanks a lot for joining us. The Buccaneers started so great, and then things have been a little bit off-kilter since. Jameis Winston still racking up tons of yards. This game was a little bit better than the last game, but the Buccaneers still seem to be a team that's finding themselves a little bit, especially after the injury to Doug Martin. What did you see in this loss to the Rams?
Look, I saw a Bucs team give up 37 points to the Rams, which was certainly disheartening and unacceptable. And it's not just the injury to Doug Martin. He's certainly a key part of what they do offensively because Dirk Cutter wants to run the football. But the injury to Robert Ayers really has proved to be critical, especially over the last 2 weeks, because this Bucs defense has given up a ton of big plays in the passing game. And last week it was two 40-yard-plus touchdown passes, one to Tavon Austin, and then one in early in the game to Brian Quick. They're not getting pressure on the quarterback. They sacked Case Keenum only once last week. And the defense on the back end, there's been miscommunication, blown coverages in the secondary. So new defensive coordinator Mike Smith has a lot of work to do.
Yeah, that's a challenge because you see that many points go up on a Rams team that is not all that explosive, and you figure, wow, they must have had a horrible day with the turnovers. Now, it wasn't great, but it was one interception, one lost fumble. It wasn't all that crazy, and it was just a one turnover differential. So that's disturbing what you're talking about in the defense, because this is a Rams team that hasn't done all that much. And even in this game, Case Keenum only threw for 190 yards, but they did get it done on the ground. And as you pointed out, they didn't get a lot of pressure on Keenum. Got to him once, but he wasn't under as much heat as you'd expect. Now, coming up next, as they try to get everything right, might not get a little easier. The Denver Broncos, who then ended up beating the Bengals by showing they do have a complete defense. Trevor Siemian, who most people wouldn't be able to pick out of a lineup still 3 weeks in, went for 312 yards and four touchdowns on the road in Cincinnati. If they had a problem getting to Keenum, how are they going to find a way to get to Siemian?
Well, that's a great question. And Mike Smith's going to have to dial up some more pressure. And when you do that, obviously, you're going to leave guys in the secondary one-on-one on an island. I don't think the Buccaneers have great man-for-man cover corners. I mean, Altheron Verner was beaten on the first touchdown. He was looking for some safety help. The safety position has not been a strong point for the Bucs. They've got Chris Conte and Bradley McDougal back there, and at times they show some athleticism needed for the position, but at times they're out of position and they're not very good tacklers. I mean, Conte gave up a real bad touchdown pass late in the first half 2 weeks ago in Arizona. There was less than 30 seconds left, and he let Jerron Brown get behind him for a long one, which is something that absolutely cannot happen. So the secondary is a mess, and along the defensive line, they need Gerald McCoy to try and beat double teams to get pressure, because outside of him was Jacquees Smith, who was injured in week one. They were counting on him to provide some pass rush. He's out for the season with a torn ACL, and Robert Ayers, a former Bronco, with the ankle injury. If Ayers doesn't play again this week, I'm not sure where that pressure is coming from.
Well, Jameis Winston's been able to be throwing the ball for a whole bunch of yards. Now, the touchdown interception ratio, 8-6, not where you want it. Also lost two fumbles, not where you want it either. But look, he's almost got 1,000 yards passing on the season already. It gets a lot tougher against the Broncos, and they have a good pass rush, and they have a great pass rush, and they have a very, very good defensive backfield as well. But it does seem the way that Winston's throwing the ball, and with the targets he has available, Vincent Jackson, Mike Evans, Adam Humphries stepped up and had 9 catches for 100, and then tight end Cameron Brate, who's been so much of a revelation that they were able to just tell Austin Seferian Jenkins to, you know, go fly a kite after his particular issues. There seems like there is an opportunity to get things done through the air, even against a top-tier team as Denver. But how does Jameis Winston find a way to avoid those costly mistakes?
Well, he's got to make better decisions with the football. And last week, there was an interception that went off the hands of Charles Sims. And then the turnover was a strip sack fumble by Robert Quinn from the blind side, who beat left tackle Donovan Smith, who has struggled mightily over the last 2 weeks. And That's not going to bode well for Donovan Smith this week because he goes up against Von Miller and the Shane Rays of this world. So the Buccaneers don't really match up all that well against a team like Denver. So what Jameis has to do is he's got to be more accurate with the football. There were some inaccurate throws last week, three-step drops. He's got to get rid of the football quickly. And he's going to have to lean on the combination of Charles Sims and Jacquizz Rodgers in the run game because Doug Martin's not going to be able to play this week.
Well, I find it fascinating when you got to see, I didn't get to see it, but I read the transcript of Dirk Koetter's post-game and his meeting on Monday, talked about how he's second-guessing his own decision not to call a timeout, saying that was a problem late in the game, and talked about specifically that the team is, and I thought it was a great quote, finding too many ways to lose a game. And I think that's something you've alluded to, is it's not just one thing that's going wrong. It's a lot of things that's going wrong. And when you have that happening, especially with some youth at the quarterback and some other positions, how do you find a way to keep that from spinning out of control?
Well, that's Dirk Koetter's job, and he made mention of that the other day when talking about changing the culture of the franchise, because let's face it, the Buccaneers, prior to coming into this year, had finished last or tied for last five straight years coming into 2016. So that's a culture of losing, and it's been around for the last several years. Their last winning season was way back in 2010 when they won 10 games under Raheem Morris, who's been long gone. The Bucs have had, I think, three or four coaches since then. I don't know. I've lost count. But that is the culture that he's been talking about. And it's up to the head coach to instill that. And it's also going to have to come, you know, inside of the walls of that locker room. I think Jameis Winston does have some of those traits that the Bucs are looking for. They've been looking for a franchise type of quarterback. He does seem to have the talent to do so. He needs to take care of the football a little bit better. But he does have the talent and the charisma and the intangibles that they're looking for. But it's got to be more than just Jameis. It's got to be Gerald McCoy on the defensive side, Quan Alexander, Lavonte David. It has to be a number of players who have to take the stand and say, you know what, guys, we've been through the losing. We can't do these things anymore. We've got to be smarter late in games. And the Bucs have done a poor job in terms of situational football as well. So that is obviously not an overnight process. That's going to take time in order for them to try and change the culture that's been lingering around here for years.
Well, there is a lot of work to do and a short time to get there, because the next 2 weeks have the defending champion Broncos and their Super Bowl opponents, the Carolina Panthers, who did look a little bit vulnerable, obviously, this last weekend. But that is going to be – it's a tough road to try to get better against those two teams. If they end up losing both of those, let's just say there's a 1-4 start – then what do you think happens? Is there a problem for Koetter? Is this a team that then maybe just starts falling off a cliff, or is there a way to maybe set these two tough games aside as long as you're seeing a little bit of silver lining?
Well, look, Dirk Koetter is a first-year NFL coach. He's 57 years old. He's waited for this opportunity for a long, long time. He's been around some pretty good head coaches, and I think having Mike Smith on his staff will certainly help if things do go south, and I have a pretty good idea they will over the next 2 weeks because, as you mentioned, Denver at home this week, and then at Carolina on Monday night. And if they go 1-4, which I think they will, you've got a bye week coming up after that. So they're going to have to stew over that for 2 weeks. So Dirk Koetter is going to need to keep that house in order. And it's a good thing he's got Mike Smith on his coaching staff in order for him to do that.
Well, this will be an interesting season. This gets fascinating, right? May you live in interesting times. I think what you look at what the Bucs have, they're trending in the right direction. But Dean Smith once said that you have to lose big, then lose small, then win big. And it seems like they're still working their way along that pattern. Tom Krasnicki from 620 WDAE. He's your midday host, 9 to noon there. And if you're listening to the Bucs game on radio, pre and post game, follow him on T-Cross. That's T-K-R-A-S. Tom, terrific insight. Thank you for spending some time with us today.
My pleasure. Thank you, Sean.
Well, the Bucs will be fascinating, so keep up with Tom as the season goes on, and keep up with us, too. We'll be back with you next week, but coming up next, the coach, Brian Billick.
Around the League.
And now to go around the NFL, we bring in the coach, Brian Billick, brought to you by SeatGeek. Visit SeatGeek.com or download the SeatGeek app. Make sure you and your family are getting the best deal on sports and concert tickets every time. Coach, an interesting week where the NFL starts to sort some things out here. It's only 3 weeks in, but it feels like we've learned a couple things about some teams. And then there's a few we found out we didn't learn anything at all. I want to start right off with the Cardinals and Bills, a game in which
Rex Ryan's seat could not have been any hotter, was basically almost in flames, and then they go out and absolutely trounce the Cardinals in a game where, quite frankly, Carson Palmer, to me, looked for the first time like he maybe was getting a little bit old. What did you see from both those teams this week?
Yeah, I think it was a surprise. It was an opportunity for Arizona, and you can always talk about that going from the quasi-West Coast to East Coast. They were playing at basically 10 o'clock, 11 o'clock in the morning body time, which is always difficult. But in an opportunity, in an atmosphere, and as you said, we've all talked all week about the pressure that Rex Ryan and the Bills were under at home. Had it not started out not well, you kind of know the way that crowd would have gone. But the thing that jumped out at me was just how much more physical the Bills were on both sides of the ball. Arizona came into the season as a physical front seven. They wanted to be able to run the ball. We know the explosives they could have with Carson Palmer and Larry Fitzgerald and that group. And they just lack that physicalness, and that's something that's got to be a concern going forward.
So let's go over to the game that I thought it was early. It was the Thursday game, and a little bit stunning, really. The Houston Texans, off to a good start, just looked completely hapless and hopeless in Foxborough. Jacoby Brissett, in his very first start, showed up and played pretty well. Looked like Bill Belichick managed to just scheme Brock Osweiler into oblivion. How much of this do you chalk up to a bad game by the Texans where you just kind of crumple it up and say, let's go on to next week? Or how many things did you see in that game that maybe concerned you about the Texans? And by the way, who are the Patriots going to play at quarterback next week?
Yeah, good question. We all have this well-founded confidence in New England that any time they're at home, that's just a tough place to play. It's a tough place to play. And why are tough places to play? Because the team is good. Yeah, the crowd is a difference and can be loud noise and stuff like that. But they're tough at home because they're good. And you knew the game plan they wanted to have. Brissett was less than 20 passes, very efficient, didn't turn the ball over, converted on some third down with his legs, saw a whole bunch of blue air at Blount. They ran for 185 yards total on the night on close to 40 attempts. And you could see that Houston just couldn't get anything going. Almost every three and out, which begs the question, okay, where does Houston go from here? Yeah, they're in a division that looks to be very winnable. But again, the challenge for Houston is, okay, can you progress through the playoffs? Have you shown any sign that your team, if in the playoffs, can go on the road, it can go into a Pittsburgh, go into a New England, and win? And they certainly didn't on Thursday night. Doesn't mean that they're not going to get better. And for New England, it's this faith in Bill Belichick is, maybe we don't even need a quarterback. Maybe we'll just direct snap to LeGarrette Blount, Julian Edelman. We're going to spot you. We're going to spot you know Tom Brady. We're going to spot you know Jimmy Garoppolo. We're going to spot you all these things. Really, it's kind of like the presidential debate. The low expectation coming into this next game, and this is going to be interesting with them playing the Buffalo Bills, because with the big win, the assumption is, and with no Tom Brady and no Garoppolo, and that they should just kill the Patriots coming off a really good win. If they don't, this is going to be interesting.
I guess that's a really good point, because I've talked about Rex Ryan a little bit, and we saw the Bills get the big win. Rex Ryan is already in full week taunting the Patriots on his Monday conversation, kind of had a grumbly little Bill Belichick imitation. He's had a tendency of doing this before, and it's what makes him such an entertaining guy to cover in the NFL. But it also sometimes gets you in trouble, because you've run into situations with coaches, with players, with anybody who are sometimes writing checks with their mouth that they can't necessarily cash. If the Bills don't get this done against New England, does Rex Ryan stand the chance of basically undoing some of the good work that he did this week?
They could, but you've got to take that chance from the standpoint of, and knowing Rex as well as I do, and the time he was with me, if you corner Rex, this is exactly what you're going to get. It eventually wore out in New York. Why? Because eventually you've got to win. That's the only way to back it up. It's like any, and I hate to use the term bully, because I'm not referring to him as a bully, but, sometimes the best way to confront a bully is just punch him in the nose. And all of a sudden now, he's no longer a bully. Well, you've got to follow it up with a win. And for them, now it's in Buffalo. And you know the fans in Buffalo and everything. They've got that little bit of chip on the shoulder, and I think they love it, providing you win. But if you do that and you don't win, particularly under these circumstances, it was great to have a great win at Arizona at home. But if you're Buffalo, and if you're Rex Ryan, and now you're playing the team that is obviously everybody's in the division's arch rival, a team that's won the last eight division titles, and they don't have a Tom Brady, and they don't have Jimmy Garoppolo, and even where they had Brissett or whoever they have in there. If you can't win now in New England, then this creates a, we're right back to where we were square one last week, and where do you go from here?
Let's head over to the AFC where no Teddy Bridgewater, no Adrian Peterson, no Matt Khalil, no problem for the Vikings who go into Carolina and really play an impressive game, beating the Panthers 22-10, their second statement game of the year. Despite it seems that the pieces and parts are falling off the wagon, the Vikings have to be off to one of the more impressive and improbable starts of the season. When you see the way they've played in the last couple weeks, what's the ceiling for these guys?
Well, I don't think there is one, and you can fill it up in three things: defense. Sam Bradford's been great for them, and they'll find a little bit of a rhythm of a running game. But this defense is as good as I've seen, and I've got a little bit of a history with this. This is good, and it's a kind of a no-name defense, with no disrespect to the players. I mean, to most lay people, you're going to name someone on the Minnesota Vikings defense, and they might come up with Anthony Barr, but outside of that, you don't. Now, still, that's a talented defense. They had eight starters that were our former first or second-round draft pick. So this is a talented defense. Mike Zimmer's brilliant. They don't do a lot. They're not a complex defense, but they're fundamentally sound in what they do. They know how to attack you. They're great open field tacklers. This defense is as advertised, and this is a team with a quarterback that should be able to manage what they need to do to complement this defense that is very much the team to beat in the NFC right now, along with the Philadelphia Eagles.
When I look at the Vikings, what I see is a comparison to last year's Denver Broncos in a lot of ways, a team that, again, very talented defense, not all that tricky. There's not any sort of a gimmicks or anything you have to overcome. But it seems to me like this is maybe to an extent a poor man's Denver Broncos from last year with an offense that maybe has an opportunity to match that or even exceed the Broncos, and they managed to go the whole way. So when you look at the Vikings, that's a pretty fascinating story. We'll see where that goes. But as for the Panthers, they lost one regular season game last year. They've already lost two. From the macro level, what seems to be off?
Well, and that's pretty lofty bar. You know,
right.
Two games, so oh my gosh, you doubled your roster from last year. Well, wait a minute now. That, you know, that's pretty tough sledding. I think what we saw in Carolina, everybody talks about the Super Bowl hangover. I don't know that I believe in that, although the numbers might indicate that. But when you play Carolina, the key is you got to get Cam Newton to throw the ball 35 times or more. Now, you could say that about a lot of teams, but Cam Newton's numbers, his productivity, falls off precipitously when he has to throw the ball 35 times or more. His 2.5 touchdowns to interception ratio drops to 1-1. His completion percentage drops down. I think he's 7-16, something like that, in games that he throws the ball more than 35 times. And so that's exactly what happened in this game. I think he threw it exactly 35 times. And they couldn't get the running game going. Again, let's go back to the defense, the turnovers that they created, the short field they were able to put that offense on. So I think this was more of less of an indictment of Carolina than it was noteworthy of what Minnesota could do on the road in Carolina.
Well, let's go to another team that's struggling after their loss last night in Monday Night Football. The Saints are 0-3. They're 0-2 at home, which is even more disturbing. Where does this team have to get better, and how much time do they have left in which to do it?
Well, it keeps coming back to the same formula. This is a team whose defense is bad in biblical proportions. I mean, I've been saying all week long that the biggest concern I had going in, and this is a perfect example. You look at the game. Drew Brees feels like if I don't score 30 points, and last night 30 was not enough, but if we don't score 30 points, we're going to lose. When he gets in that mode, 2 years ago in 2014, he threw 17 interceptions. Why? Because they were next to last in the league in defense. 2 years before that, 2012, he threw 19 interceptions. And that's not Drew Brees. Why? Because they were last in the league in defense. They've got to go out and you know, if we don't score 30 points, we're going to lose. And that puts Drew Brees in a situation where he has to maybe make some throws or do some things that he wouldn't normally do in a more equitable situation. Even though Drew Brees had a brilliant night, Matt Ryan, who now the last two games has looked more like the Matt Ryan of old in terms, you know, had a very equitable night in what he did. And I just think the defense that New Orleans is spotting team and what Drew Brees has to do to overcome that. I mean, throwing the ball 54 times, I don't care who you are, is just not a good thing.
Well, we'll wrap up with one of the faces of the league here. Last week, there were questions surrounding Aaron Rodgers, questions surrounding the Packers. You know, is something really wrong? Packers come out, Aaron Rodgers throws four touchdowns in the first half and does it effortlessly. For the Packers now, they got Eddie Lacy had his first ever 100-yard rushing game in September. Rodgers looks right again. Jordy Nelson is healthy. Was this just maybe the start of something special for the Packers this week against the Lions?
Well, and I think you just pointed out the key for them, their ability to run the ball. In the previous games, they didn't have that kind of rhythm. They need to have that running game as a balance. The unique thing about the Green Bay Packers is the receiving core, like their entire team. It's homegrown. It's always has been. When you had Donald Driver and Greg Jennings and in the heyday of their Super Bowl, and then a young Jordy Nelson. And I thought Jordy Nelson, when he got hurt last year, was great opportunity for the other receivers to get into that rhythm, you know, with now Devontae Adams and then Randall Cobb and Rodgers, the tight end, to really, you know, develop that rapport with Aaron Rodgers. And then now when you had Jordy Nelson back, boy, you're off and running. And early on, we didn't see that. We saw a bit of that last night, that we or on Sunday. Now, what we also saw was the defense that kind of let Detroit back in the door a little bit. So that's still my biggest concern for them. But offensively, it's hard to look at Green Bay and not feel like they may not lead the league in offense that we're used to seeing in these mega games, but they've got some balance and a plan. I like it when they come out of the no huddle, when they have a little more orchestrated offense. I think that suits them a little bit better. So they obviously have got to feel very good about where they are. But they're also in a division now facing a team that we just talked about, the Minnesota Vikings, that are pretty darn good.
He is the coach. This is Brian Billick, and we tell you every week when you listen to him, you become a smarter football fan. Thanks for your time, Coach. We'll catch you next week.
Sounds good.
Remember to visit SeatGeek.com or download the SeatGeek app. They present the coach and make sure your family gets getting the best deal on sports and concert tickets every time. So visit SeatGeek.com. Next up, we're going to overtime.
Overtime.
It is overtime, and joining us today, the inimitable Sean Salisbury. You know him from SB Nation Radio. Hey, I also know a guy from there. That's me. And you can find him at Sean Unfiltered on Twitter. I highly suggest, if you're not doing that, you should do that already. Sean, how are you doing today? Oh, hey, no problem at all. So we have a six-pack of questions ready for overtime. Let's start right here. Trevor Siemian had 312 yards, four touchdowns in Cincinnati, his very first road start for the Denver Broncos. Judging at the quarterbacking they had last year, is he a better option right now than Peyton Manning or Brock Osweiler was in 2015?
Better option, here's the difference. You had the Brock, who was more physical than Peyton. Peyton at the time, you know, when the change was made, and Peyton, who is the smartest quarterback we've ever had, and then the most – the best at manipulating a game plan or a defense that we've ever seen. So, and cerebral. So you had a combination of both, but I think this kid's got both. Now, I don't want to go overboard and say after three starts, he's better than Brock, but Brock only had six starts. So physically, and the ability, the things that he's showing, especially last week on the road, are pretty impressive. I'm not ready to go there yet, just right now after three games, because what Peyton did was keep you out of bad plays for the most part as well. So I think that combination's better still, but I'm impressed with this kid, the quantum leaps he's made from week one to week, you know, now heading into week four. I give him a lot of credit, and I'm actually excited and proud of him. It's fun to watch, but I'll still stick with the two-headed guys from last year because of their experience.
Let's move on to a two-headed guy that's turned out by a necessity up in New England. Jimmy Garoppolo, Jacoby Brissett. Don't know which one's going to play, if either. Maybe it's even Julian Edelman. But does it matter? Is this team going to hand Tom Brady a bright, shiny 4-0 record upon his return from suspension?
Yeah, I think so, especially since they have this game at home again. Now, you know that they're going to try to pressure either guy. But the key, if you're going to blitz a young quarterback, you're probably playing into their hands, because then they don't have to go through the whole process of reading it out. They can just pick one receiver and bet the best matchup and throw it. So that's the problem. The key is play them zone and make them go through their progressions. But I'm not sure it matters, although obviously Garoppolo gives you not only the feet and the arm. I think you're a little more limited with Jacoby Brissett. That being said, we've never had a coach in the history of this game who's a better in-game adjuster and better game planner than Bill Belichick. Doesn't matter who they play. I do believe they're going to be 4-0, especially since this game's at home. I think Garoppolo is actually going to play, which is an advantage for New England. And Tom Brady comes back, and Cleveland is his first start, and they will be 5-0 after that one.
Jared Goff, the first pick in the draft, hasn't seen the field yet. No idea when he will. Are the Rams being too cautious with him, judging by the success of all these other young signal callers this season?
I believe so. Now Case Keenum's a serviceable starter and a pretty solid backup and carved a niche in the league, but they've got a really good defense. And at some point, this just tells you how far behind the Wentz's and Dak Prescott's that Goff is coming from his system. It just does. So, and Jeff Fish is always leery. He's done it with players before about putting young guys in. But as long as they keep winning, he's going to be able to buy time without from the fans without having to start Jared Goff. But it just shows you terminology and how difficult it is to come from that system, an air raid system, and apply it to NFL, the mechanics of getting under center. So they're going to stick with this as long as they possibly can, unless they lose 3 or 4 in a row. But Goff's – I didn't think Goff should have been the first pick of the draft. I think he'll be fine. But I liked Wentz. I actually like Prescott even better as well, and Paxton Lynch. So we'll see in the long run. But this is probably the best thing, because he came out of camp not ready to play, and Case Keenum's getting him by.
Over in Green Bay, Eddie Lacy notched his first ever 100-yard outing in September, as hard as that is to believe. Notoriously slow starter, but we talked about the weight loss. Is this the year that he finally blossoms into one of the league's great running backs?
He's going to have to, and I think as long as he stays focused on making sure his body's right and can stay healthy, yeah. And it is hard to fathom that guy's first September 100-yard rushing game this early in the season. It is hard to believe, but as long as Rodgers stays upright and they stay in rhythm, they're a difficult team to beat in the NFC. And I'm going to tell you the key for them, not only is protecting Rodgers, but it'll make it even easier on Aaron Rodgers and everybody else if Eddie Lacy stays healthy and can average a 22 to 30 carries or touch of the game. So, yeah, I think this is a monster step for him. And in a league that we're kind of deficient of top flight first, upper echelon, Todd Gurley, Le'Veon Bell type backs, I think Eddie Lacy can be one of them, as long as the commitment to watching out for his body and taking care of it's there, because he'll get his touches, especially if the season rolls on in a cold weather Green Bay.
John, after the Saints' blowout loss on Monday night, Drew Brees talked about that game and said he thinks things will turn around for the Saints. How do they turn around when they're giving up 30-something points a game, and is it too late already?
Yeah, it's not turning around. That's because Superman, meaning Drew Brees, is so optimistic and has had to carry a franchise. Can you imagine how bad they'd be without him? I mean, good gracious. He has to hang 35 or 40 a week to keep them in a game. They're the notoriously bad defense, and maybe that has something to do with the fact that their offense, scores a lot of points and plays fast and throws the football. But that's in it. A lot of teams do that. So that's a bad excuse. They've got a lot of injuries on defense, but they haven't drafted well either. They're underachievers. It's a bad defense. Sometimes you just got to recognize that your personnel is not as good as the other guys, and it's impossible to ask a quarterback to throw 35 and 40 points a game on you and to throw for 5,000 yards a season and 45 touchdowns. Brees is phenomenal. He is the franchise. But it's not going to change. That team is going to battle for, they'll be lucky to win 6 or 7 games, and if they do, it'll be because of him. It's not changing, though. The culture of that team is offense, bad defensive personnel, and it doesn't matter who the coordinator is, Rob Ryan, Dennis Allen. They're just not, whether they're not committed to it or whether they don't understand how to play it, bottom line is the New Orleans Saints will always, well, at least for now, until the defense gets better, doesn't matter how good the offense is, they'll always be chasing people.
Now for the final question of our six-pack, we go to the Pacific Northwest. Russell Wilson is battling injuries to both his legs. Now, obviously, you want your line to protect you better, but at this point, is Russell Wilson now responsible for finding a way to better protect himself?
Yeah, he is. But he's really, when he is he's taken some hits, and that offensive line is not good. And he had to overcome that last year and really took another step in his game. But they've got to make a commitment to that position. That's number one. But now we know from the ankle to now the knee, where is he going to be? But, you know, and after this, they have the bye week, so getting ready to play the Jets. Do you rest him and say with Arizona's 1-2 starts, St. Louis, I mean, the Los Angeles Rams don't have a great offense. Should we rest him? I think if he's 85% or more, you play him. But he is really good at finding pockets to slide in. So I give him a lot of credit. The problem is taking hits in the pocket, you can't defend. And if you can't get out of bounds and it's 3rd and 3 and you got to dive for a first down, you're going to put yourself in a bind. But he is a great player, a great playmaker, but also one of the smartest running / passing quarterbacks we have in this league. But they have to keep him healthy because we saw them finally break out offensively without Russell Wilson. That team becomes that team will have to do what Denver's doing for the most part and win on offense. But Russell Wilson, if he's close to being healthy, they'll play him.
That is Sean Salisbury spitting the truth over at SB Nation Radio and especially on his Twitter feed. Make sure you're following that at Sean Unfiltered. Thanks so much for your time today, Sean. Really appreciate it.
Honored to be on. I really appreciate you guys having me. Thank you.
Thank you. Well, that's a wrap for now, but be sure to check all the archives posted over at audioboom.com. Search for NFL Files and check out all the podcasts for every team in the league because we cover them all. My name is Sean Drotar, and you can follow me on Twitter at sdrotar. That's S-D-R-O-T-A-R. And I will catch you next week.
This has been a Sports Show production. For more team-specific podcasts, visit sportsshow.com.